Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, what do we do now? I don't even know where to begin, to tell you the truth, tonight. What happened today in Orem, Utah, has no place in America. None. Political violence has no place. America is stronger when people in a free society get to express their opinions. It is weakened when they are killed for it. I don't care who they are. And it happened again today. Conservative activist Charlie Kirk, who's super popular with college kids, shot and killed at an event he was hosting at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah.
You're listening to KDKA Radio in Pittsburgh. React to the shooting death of Charlie Kirk in this special edition of On Deadline. Next, Michael Bartley will bring you to the campus where Kirk drew his last breath. And we're going to take this moment to tell you about Charlie Kirk and why his death is such a flashpoint in the United States. Charlie Kirk was a firestorm in human form, one of the highest profile conservative activists and media personalities in the U.S., and he was a trusted ally of President Donald Trump. He was just 31 years old. He was married. He had two young kids. He said what some considered to be scandalous things, and then invited people to argue with him. He founded Turning Point, an organization created to bring conservative ideas to liberal colleges, and was just kicking off a speaking tour when he was killed. His last exchange was with a student who asked how many shootings are done by transgender people. Kirk answered, "Too many." Those who have seen the video online know what happened soon after. It looked like his neck exploded with a fountain of blood and he slumped over, the crowd going into a panic. The broader answer, really, is that there are too many politically motivated shootings in the U.S. and too much mass violence at American schools. Period. Full stop. Kirk's death has people across the aisle reminding us that no matter which political party you follow, we are Americans. And in America, people should be safe in public places no matter how you feel about them personally. Disagree? Sure, go ahead. Argue. Yell even. But opening fire because you don't like someone's political views? We shouldn't need to be reminded of this, but for some reason, we have to say it again, and again, and then again. Killing to make a point is never right. Here's more from KDKA.
The governor of Utah, Spencer Cox. This is part of his statement just a few moments ago.
Our nation is broken. We've had political assassinations recently in Minnesota. We had an attempted assassination on the governor of Pennsylvania. And we had an attempted assassination on a presidential candidate and former president of the United States.
Our nation is broken. First, I want to go live to Utah Valley University. They call it UVU. Slade Jepson is a student there, and Tanner Ricks is a student at BYU, which is next door. And I know a lot of these kids because they're missionaries in Pittsburgh, and they go back home to Utah or Idaho, and a lot of them go to BYU, and they go to Utah Valley. And Tanner Ricks, you go to BYU, but there were quite a few BYU kids who went to the Charlie Kirk debate, rally, outdoor activity event today. So it was a mix of students from UVU, BYU, And I want to ask both of you, beginning with Slade, what is the campus like tonight? I know the students have to be traumatized. Slade.
I would describe the campus right now as very somber. Not all classes were canceled, of course. And it's really sad to see so many people show out at a campus and at an event to watch and, who knows, debate, talk about all these different things that we as a country in America can talk about because we have freedom to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to see how much of it can just go south just like that. I would describe it as somber and shock. I feel like most people don't know how to react because this doesn't happen every day. This is something that should never happen. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are in shock. That's how I describe it.
It's the way, the way I see it as well. Tanner, what about you? Same question, Tanner.
Yeah, I would agree with Slade in saying that people are shocked and I would say even horrified. I was in class when we discovered the news. I had an individual, a friend of mine who was actually at the event, who texted me saying that he was just running and had just gone to his car shortly after the shooting. And we announced it to the teacher and the teacher announced it to the class and everyone was just kind of horrified. Hard to believe that this could happen so close here in Utah, surrounded by, you know, people who support Charlie Kirk. No one kind of knows what to do. As I walked out of class, everyone was shocked. Everyone was talking about it. People are stunned. And I would just say overall, we don't really know what to do. We've kind of just been sitting here talking about it, watching the news, kind of lost motivation for anything else.
Let me ask both of you, and I get that. I get the adjectives you guys are saying, shock and trauma and the whole thing. The governor mentioned that they're interviewing a person of interest right now. The person's in custody, but where that goes, we don't know, because they had one person arrested earlier today who they had to let go. Had nothing to do with this shooting. For so many hours today, when after they realized that they didn't have the right person, there was, I don't know, a professional killer, a sniper, I don't know, on the loose. You guys had to be, you and your friends had to be quite nervous and scared.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tanner, you Absolutely. Go first. Go ahead, Tanner.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. We kind of didn't really know what to do over here at BYU. We were only, a short 10 minutes away from UVU, and we had, police officers driving down the road as quick as they could to get to UVU. But I was getting calls from friends and from my mother, asking me if I was okay, what I was doing. We were talking as a roommates about it. And so we kind of were in this weird limbo where we really weren't sure what to do. Obviously, UVU was on lockdown, but here at BYU, things kind of just remained the same. But people definitely kind of left campus.
But BYU, when I was on BYU and then Slade, remember, our friend Aiden and I, we came over to pick you up at UVU where this happened. To me, it's just right down the street. So, and everybody knows everybody. Slade, same mm-hmm. question for you, Slade. I during those hours, and they say a person of interest, but they haven't charged this person or said that this is the guy. I don't know. We have to wait and see. But that had to be a tense time, Slade.
Oh, absolutely. I was definitely, like I said before, I was a lot in shock. And I feel like this is like a moment that, and so close to such a controversy like 9/11, right? What day is it today? The 10th?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. It's so close to that date. And I think it's one of those moments where I'll never forget when people ask, where were you when Charlie Kirk was murdered?
Wow.
And that's the first thing I thought of. I thought about how big this really was. And nationally, right? Like one of my friends who had not lived in Utah was one of the first people to send me videos of it. And I was like, okay, this is a very big deal.
A very big deal indeed. Here's Lenny McAllister on KDKA's The Big K Morning Show, talking about who Charlie Kirk was and what exactly he represented.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of people did not know who Charlie Kirk was, but you did. When did you meet him?
I met Charlie Kirk in 2010. A lot of people know him from Turning Point. They know him from, you know, the Trump campaign. They know him from, you know, his radio show. I met him as a high school kid at Tea Party events that I spoke at regularly when I was in Illinois. I used to see him at least once a month. He was the youngest person at the events, and I would spend time with him, and we would talk. And when I heard the news, Larry, I didn't go back to any of the stuff, you know, politically. I didn't even go back to the stuff that he and I may disagree upon now. And there were plenty of political issues that we did disagree upon at this point in time. But I went back to the teenage kid that would come over to me and want to take a picture, or the teenage kid that would come up to me at the convention down in Tampa. Every time I see him, all I see is the teenage kid that I first met. And and that's what I saw when I heard the news yesterday.
And he was a teenage kid in 2012 when he started Turning Point USA. How did he rise to such high impact at the highest level?
He came in at the right time. He came in at the height of the Tea Party movement. He was motivated to want to bring a conservative voice to college campuses. And I think it's very easy for people to forget that 12 to 15 years ago, there was a huge backlash against conservatives even speaking on college campuses. And there was a big issue that people would talk about for years, and something that the Trump administration is maybe overcorrecting upon now, is the lack of balance on political campuses. He wanted to create spaces where conservatives could get their point of view across and not feel as though they were ostracized. And when you take that, coupled with the Tea Party movement, with the Obama presidency at the time, so it was a counterweight to that. And he was a young person that was speaking to a generation that wasn't being spoken to at that point in time, other than the Obama movement of 2008. It came at the right time, and he caught lightning in a bottle.
And that said, this rally on the campus of Utah Valley University, thousands of people were there yesterday, and beautiful sunny day. He was throwing out hats to the crowd and then sat down and did a Q&A. Explain how this process worked, where he would go to the campuses, and apparently this was the first of many that he was going to visit this fall. And what did these gatherings present in terms of an exchange with the student body?
You know, anybody that's done public speaking knows that you have this mix of both being vulnerable, but also being personable. And that's basically what it was. He was going there to have an opportunity to answer some questions, to give some perspectives. It's something that plenty of folks, I've done it myself over the years, where you go into an environment and you engage people. And that's what this was. Now, of course, Turning Point is over $50 million operation. So it's going to look a little different than when other activists or other speakers go and do it. But that's basically the gist of it, to be able to go around and now that the school year had started, go on a school tour and talk to people and express ideas and kind of in Charlie style and many other styles, almost have like a mini Q&A/debate in front of sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of people.
And that said, I'm curious about the platform for Turning Point USA. We are joined once again by our own political analyst, Lenny McAllister. Lenny, thinking about Charlie Kirk and his family, his wife Erica, a former Miss Arizona entrepreneur, philanthropist, played collegiate basketball too. They married in May of 2021. She's the founder of Proclaim Streetwear and Everyday Heroes Like You, and host of a podcast called Midweek Rise Up. They have two young children, a son and a daughter. And again, I think of their family first. His wife also holds a doctorate in biblical studies from Liberty University and studied political science and international relations at Arizona State University. That said, for those that don't know Charlie Kirk and the fact that he founded Turning Point USA, what are some of the platforms that this is based on?
So when I see the name on television, I not only think about all the platforms that he created and all the different people that he gave platforms to through his activism, but I mean, I still think about the young guy that I met. I think about sitting down and, you know, sharing chicken tenders or French fries. I think about riding public transportation in Chicago. I think about the Tea Party events in different parts of the northern part of Illinois, whether it's Libertyville or Lake County. I think about just the whole trajectory of what he did, from literally talking to me about what he was going to name the organization, him coming up to me in Tampa and telling me, I think I'm going to name it Turning Point. I'm going to start on the paperwork with Bill as soon as I get back to Illinois from the convention, to seeing his early days. I had somebody posted on Facebook and tagged me with it and reminded me of a story where in 2012, we were all going around together and Charlie Kirk and I were the two headliners at a event in Illinois, which is, of course, is, you know, kind of funny to think about considering how far he went with this. But I think about all those things. And then I just think about 31 years old and just where we are as a country, where, you know, we've been living 1968 for many, many years now. We've been living 1968 for almost 8 to 10 years. Between the assassination attempts and now an assassination and the pandemic, is we're living through some traumatic times as Americans.
Sure, like 1968 in the sense of our public spaces feeling unsafe and the threat of violence lurking all around. But it's unlike 1968 in the weapons of war that so many have access to. Here's former Secret Service agent John Hudson talking about the shooter who killed Charlie Kirk, the specifics of the gun used, and the kind of skills it took.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we're looking at about 200 yards, which, quite honestly, in Marine Corps boot camp, which I was a former Marine as well as a Secret Service agent, former Marine, we start practicing at 200 yards, and that's where we train at the minimum distance. So it's not, you know, there have been reports it's a very tough shot. It's a long distance. It's not that long of a distance if you're trained, which leads us to believe there's probably some professional training that this individual has had to be able to take that one shot, one kill of a target from maybe 12 inches in diameter. And that's the distance that the Marines trained from, as well as 300 and 500. But from 200 yards on top of a rooftop, from what the reports suggest and the images and video that have come out suggest, that's where the perpetrator set up there. He was in a prone position, basically laying on his belly. That's a very simple shot to make from, you know, someone who has a day of worth of training, quite honestly.
Really?
So it's not that far. It's not that far out as some may think it is. Maybe for shooting a deer in the woods for the average hunter, it might seem like it's a long shot away. But from someone who has gone through training, this is a very short shot.
So that said, John, would we believe that this person had that kind of training? Because it seems like a single shot from that distance, you would have to have some training. And what kind of rifle? Would it be a sniper rifle, or could you do this with a simple assault rifle?
Yeah, so you can do this with the assault rifle. You can do it with an AR, which is considered an assault rifle. Definitely a sniper rifle with a scope. I'm sure this probably had some type of scope on it. And again, in Marine Corps training at 200 yards in the offhand position where you're standing up and you have that weapon trained and downrange on a 12-inch bullseye, you're hitting it in the offhand position. With this guy on his belly, there's, you know, from a trained person, you know, you're going to hit this probably 10 out of 10 times. And it's not a difficult shot. So there are a couple things that lead me to believe it's a professional hit. One, the way he's was able to surreptitiously get onto the campus carrying a long gun and escape capture on the departure. So this was rehearsed. You know, when Charlie Kirk shows up to these types of events, it's probably, you know, 3-4 weeks, maybe out to a month plus of security planning that goes into this. In this particular case, it was a kickoff of a series of university speeches that he was doing across the country. And this marked the kickoff of that with some 4,000 people there. Stone had the time to plan the escape, to set up and avoid CCTV to some extent. I'm sure as the video unfolds and they scour through that, they'll identify this guy and he will be captured, or this suspect, should I say, and he will be captured at some point.
You feel confident in that?
I feel confident that he will be captured. He, she will be captured without a doubt. You can't just get on with today's technology, as you know, even in the Pittsburgh area, with license plate recognition systems, with the amount of CCTV, closed circuit television systems on the streets at traffic signal lights, that they will go back, they will investigate this person going up a stairwell somewhere along the way to get up to that roof. And typically when you enter in any of the buildings on schools, you have cameras facing outward of people entering buildings and of their surrounding campus in what we call the common area. So I believe wholeheartedly that Cash Patel, his group of people, it's an FBI problem now, that they will have all man on deck and they will capture this guy, and it will be soon.
One of the things that's come out in the hours since the news of Charlie Kirk's death broke is a sense of unity across both sides of the aisle, at least briefly. And it's a flame we should keep fanning in the hopes that it spreads. Here's Scoot from WWL in New Orleans talking about how people who didn't love Charlie Kirk should still hate the act that took his life.
I have a lot of fun bashing Charlie Kirk. I have a lot of fun pointing out how Kirk was making fun of Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, and J-Lo, criticizing them because they don't look or act their age. And I said, well, take a look at Charlie Kirk. I mean, look at this guy. You don't have to go around looking like a conservative old man. You know, you don't have to act your age. No reason to criticize anybody. So I've had fun criticizing Charlie Kirk. But to take this a step further and shoot him, this is where we cross the line in America. And this is where we are now. And it's not right. It's not right. I think we forget that this country was built on differing opinions. You think all of our founding fathers came together and agreed with each other? If you think that, you don't know anything about American history. There were arguments, vicious arguments. There were debates. There had been political debates throughout time. This country was built on disagreement. And the First Amendment gives us a right to disagree even with the President of the United States, something that our current president doesn't seem to understand, that we have a constitutional right to criticize him. But that's another topic. But as much as I might disagree with Charlie Kirk and have fun talking about him, this is not America. The idea that you shoot somebody. And this is wrong. This is not America. We're spinning in this evolution away from what we're supposed to be. And at some point, man, we've got to just put on the brakes and say, stop, wait a minute. I mean, if you think about violence over somebody that you disagree with, and you want to act on that violence, first of all, just expressing it is wrong. But if you want to act on that violence, man, you got to look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, are you an American? Or are you some kind of a third world radical activist and you want to take action to overthrow the government or to do away with dissension? This is just, it's very disturbing. And again, as much as I have fun, look, if I see something from Charlie Kirk in the news, I got to be honest with you, I look forward to coming on the air and talking about it. Because Charlie Kirk and I are totally opposite each other. But I would never condone any act of violence against Charlie Kirk or against anybody. And before those of you on the right say, yeah, it's some liberal, man. They want to silence the conservative voice. Both sides are doing it. I'm not entertaining any conversation about, well, it's the left, man. They want to silence us. Shut up with that. Because it's not just the left. It's the right, too. But when it comes to politics and we disagree and people want to get violent, this is wrong. Because nobody should be shot because of their opinion. Nobody. Nobody should be threatened. Nobody should be beaten up. Nobody should be attacked because of their opinion. What happened to America? What happened to our country?
Charlie Kirk may have been gunned down in Utah, but no American city has been in the spotlight for violence as much as Minneapolis has recently. Here's Blois Olson, political analyst for WCCO in Minneapolis, with more perspective.
There is clearly a disturbing subculture of people growing, I'm afraid, that believe this is the way to solve and settle our differences. I don't know if you remember where you were when Reagan was shot, but I was a young kid. And then you look back and you think about, like, why John Hinckley did it. It was for fame. Now everybody who's got this illness has their different reason, but we have to start understanding it. And the only way I've found in life to understand tough situations is to pause, reflect, and try to gather everything. And I hope the country and both sides take some time to pause and reflect. But I'm not optimistic today.
I know. Where do we go from this? This is, you know, for those of us in our lifetime, this is very stark. This is horrible, you know, what happened yesterday and what happened to Melissa Hortman, Melissa and Mark Hortman. You know, this type of reaction is just, it shakes you to the core, you know, when things like this happen. So is this similar to when, you know, when in the 60s these things were happening? I want to get some perspective. Go ahead, Blois.
Well, I was just going to say, I think I've told this story before, but a former colleague of mine was Humphrey's last speechwriter, and he's a huge 1968 historian. His name's Bob Meek, and I called him during 2020, and I said, "Okay, Mr. 1968, what do I need to understand?" And he said, 5 to 6 years before anything settles out, it's going to be chaos for 5 to 6 years. Well, we're at five. And I don't see any signs of it settling out. So I think that's one of the things I took from that generation.
While unity has been a theme, some are worried that Kirk's death will widen the gulf between the right and left in America. Here's political analyst Mark Sandalow on KCBS in the Bay Area with more on that.
And this is a very sad day for American politics. And it doesn't matter whether you find Charlie Kirk, you know, inspirational or deplorable. And there are certainly lots of people who found him both of those things. Whenever you silence somebody by, you know, putting a bullet in their neck so they can't talk anymore and kill them, it's a tragic day. And the divisions are obvious. And I really am very saddened that this happens in the United States. It also is very, very tough to hear the President of the United States go on national television last night to say that he's angry. And he went on to talk about how he talked about the violence in America. He pointed out how he had been shot. He talked about the violence against ICE agents. He talked about the shooting of Steve Scalise back in 2017, about the CEO from United Healthcare in Manhattan earlier this summer. And he went on to say radical left political violence has hit too many innocent people and taken too many lives. Those words are precisely the problem. That, you know, I mean, of course, all of that is true, but he doesn't mention the Minnesota lawmakers, the Democrats, who were shot and killed over the summer. He doesn't mention the planned kidnapping of, you know, the Minnesota or the Michigan governor, or the firebombing and the torching of the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania's home over the summer. He doesn't mention the hammer attack on Paul Pelosi, which just earlier this week he made fun of on his own feeds, Truth Social feed. This is definitely a problem with America right now. And President Trump, I think, is right in blaming the public and the media for sort of building these people into these hateful camps of one another. There's some irony to hear the president say, I'm just quoting him here, saying that violence and murder are the direct result of demonizing those whom you disagree with in the most hateful way. He's absolutely right. He's also guilty, number one.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the social media aspects of this, and that anonymity that social media grants allows people to say some horrible things.
I'm amazed at the things that people say that aren't even anonymous, Eric. I mean, it's the people who are out there dancing and rejoicing at his death, you know, that is sick as well. This is a young man with a family, you know, and a wife. And although Charlie Kirk was hardly, you know, Martin Luther King, and he wasn't out there preaching nonviolence, that said, he was not acting violently himself. And you don't want to put down, you know, people simply for their words. So, I mean, there's sickness on the left, there's sickness on the right. I'm drawn to it. 35 years ago this spring, after Martin Luther King was killed, when Robert Kennedy stood before a crowd in Indianapolis, a mostly African-American crowd, and announced that Martin Luther King had been shot and killed. And he went on to say, let's not retreat into hatred. Let's not retreat into anger. Let us pray for a better America, and let us try to understand all parts of this. Those are the words that should have come from the president, but those are the words that need to come from our political leaders today.
We'll wrap up things now with Nancy Cortez, CBS's White House correspondent, with the latest on the shooter.
So what is the status of the search for that suspect, and what do we know about that suspect other than it's a person in black clothing that's a good shot?
That's all we know. That's all that White House officials appear to know. I can tell you that there is great sadness and outrage here at the White House, where we saw officials in shock yesterday. We saw them in tears yesterday, because Charlie Kirk was not just someone who they saw as a sort of brother in arms and as an inspiration politically, but they knew him well. And some of them even described him as a family member or a little brother. And they credit him with helping get President Trump reelected in 2024, particularly because of his influence and his organizing power among young Americans. So it was a massive gut punch here yesterday. And the vice president, who really was championed by Charlie Kirk to be Donald Trump's running mate, he was planning to go to New York this morning to commemorate the 9/11 anniversary and attend ceremonies there. He is instead heading to Salt Lake City to be with Kirk's wife and their children.
For the people who followed the coverage yesterday, immediately a couple of people were taken into custody. What has happened in regards to that?
Well, it sounds like those people have been released, as I'm sure you know from covering other crimes, mass shootings, in the early hours after those incidents happen. There's so much confusion and shouting and misunderstandings between people who are running for their lives, who believe they saw something that was suspicious, And it sounds like out of an abundance of caution, police did take one or two people into custody, but later said that those individuals were not the perpetrator. Even the FBI director said that. So as far as we know, the search is still on, and law enforcement officials may know more about who this suspect might be. Obviously, it's someone who was trained in sharpshooting from quite a distance away. But other than that, the public and the media have not been told anything else about this individual. And, you know, people are assuming that this was politically motivated, but really at this point, we know nothing about who the shooter was and why they did what they did.
Has the weapon used in the shooting been recovered?
Not that I know of.
This is putting the spotlight once again on political violence, and we've seen it in recent years. We've seen it historically in the country. What's been the reaction to that among our political leaders?
I would say most political leaders, the overwhelming majority, have condemned this violence in strong terms. And I'm talking about politicians from across the political spectrum. They have said that you know, no one should be targeted for their political views, whether you agree with them or not. I mean, we've seen so much political violence, even just this year in this country. There was a Democratic politician gunned down in her home in Minnesota this summer. We saw Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania's residence set on fire by someone because of, you know, his political views potentially. So there's been mass condemnation and a desire to bring down the rhetoric. There are some who have tried to blame one side or the other, and that's unfortunate. The president last night, who we've been told is very broken up about this this shooting, who had such great affection for Charlie Kirk, he said that radical left-wing violence was to blame for Kirk's death. And again, we don't know. We don't know anything about what led to this shooting. We can obviously draw conclusions, but you know, the reality is that political violence, sadly, takes place across the spectrum, and most politicians are condemning it across the spectrum.
And just a final question. What do you see as the significance of the event taking place on a college campus, given the violence that we've seen on college campuses?
You know, I just think it's really sad that this is something that is going to be seared in so many brains of young people. And I think it can't be overstated how well known Charlie Kirk was to young people in America. And I'm talking about even younger than college age. A lot of high school students who were introduced to politics by watching his debates on college campuses, and whether they were rooting for him to win those debates or rooting for more liberal students to win their debates against him, they loved watching these videos. They got inspired by watching them. He was ubiquitous online. And I think that this is going to be a day that is seared in the memories of many young people. And I think it's important for older Americans, for their parents, to talk to them about it, because whether you know it or not, your child was aware of and influenced by Charlie Kirk online, and probably has a lot of complicated feelings about what they saw.
Thank you so much for listening to this special episode of On Deadline. You can subscribe to the show on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.